What you're going to hear over the next couple hours may indeed frighten you. It's the kill shot. Remote viewer, Dr. Doom, Ed Dames back with us. We're going to be talking about surviving the kill shot. There is hope. Ed's next with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, always a treat with Major Ed Dames. I don't know whether he's going to scare the living daylights out of me or what. He, of course, is the world's foremost remote viewing teacher. He has seminars all over the country. He's a former major in the U.S. Army, retired, decorated military intelligence officer, original member of the U.S. Army's prototype remote viewing training program. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Are you going to scare us today, Dr. Doom, or what?
Yes, I am, George.
Oh, good morning. Great. It's good to talk with you. How's everything?
It's okay. This is going to be a bad year for all of us. I'll do my thing here. 20 years, by the way. 20 years on Coast to Coast this year.
Oh, my gosh. The kill shot. We're going to talk a lot about it tonight, but for people who are brand new to the program, Major, tell us about the kill shot. What is that?
Well, a brief background. In the military, I was the operations and training officer, as you know, and some of your listeners know, for the Psy Spy, the U.S.'s psychic spy team, 30 years ago now. And we started experimenting with remote viewing in terms of time and space. We found out that mind is outside of time. It can see over the horizon as well as in the past and the present. And we were especially interested in warfare. What's the intent of the enemy? For instance, right now, I'm doing deep mind probes of Kim Jong-un. Mm-hmm. In Korea to see what his intent are. So these are the kinds of things we were doing to prevent technological and surprises on future battlefields. But we began to see something that was not battle-related. Well, at first we thought it was a nuclear war, but it was not. It was the sun spewing out massive coronal mass ejections, plasma, and affecting the Earth drastically. And by the way, we have not stopped studying this phenomenon or ensemble of information. We've now anecdotally, but importantly, realized that a lot of the damage that I'll talk about tonight that leads to infrastructure collapse on our planet is because the Earth's core is rapidly changing. And we've kept looking up at the sun at these damaging coronal mass ejections, but it turns out that they're damaging to a great part because the Earth's core, the magnetic field of the Earth is weakening and deteriorating. But anyway, and then scientists all of a sudden started jumping on the bandwagon and saying, we're scared. And all of a sudden they had something to be scared about. I predicted a shot across the bow in 2012. And that shot across the bow happened 2 weeks after I said it would, and it turned out to be a flare that was so massive, and we're not talking the Carrington event of
the 1800s, yeah.
It took the telegraph lines out. We're talking a very, very big one. So we dodged that bullet. If it would have been directed at Earth by that particular active solar region, you can look at the scientific estimates of how many people would have died. Just an infrastructure collapse alone. And infrastructure collapse, for instance, if a power grid goes out, and that's one of the things that a solar flare of this magnitude can cause and will, if that happens, then just one thing, and we'll talk about others tonight, if you're in a metropolitan area and refrigeration doesn't work, you're talking starvation within a week or so of a lot of people, because in these modern days and times, that food has to be preserved and refrigerated. If there's no electricity in cities and the power won't come back up for 6 months to a year or more in many places, when this happens in certain places, then you're talking starvation, not to mention all the other Mad Max scenario types of things. So we feel that this is really, we're really on the cusp of this thing occurring, and I'll get into more details about that. So that's what we were looking at. And then, of course, how do you survive it, which is what we'll be talking about tonight. But the reason we found it was that we were looking at civilians in the future who were in bunkers. And in most of the places, these were the survivors. The people above ground in some places were rotting corpses. They weren't people anymore. And we began to look at zones that were in the long term, because we don't know how long the scenario will last and the long-term effects. But where were the optimal places to live? And that's what we've been studying for the past many years, 10 particularly. Where are the optimal places to survive long-term on the planet? And we put together a map, which I'll talk about momentarily. And I changed the tone of my voice because we've been hammered by people who want this map, and I've only given it out behind closed doors. But we've changed the way we're going to do things regarding that map. The survival, the optimum survival zones on Earth are shockingly few in long term. They're especially in the southern hemisphere. For instance, in Australia, there's only one zone in the entire continent up in the northeast that it represents, based upon our work, a survival zone, optimal survival zone, and I'll qualify all that this evening.
Or he said, don't you?
I'm sorry?
You call these places to go your sanctuary.
Well, the personal sanctuaries... as you know, I worked yours, and
yes.
We can't talk about the location for reasons I'll discuss tonight, but I worked yours. And when I do this as an expert downloader, this is what I'm doing. Your unconscious constantly tries to protect you. It's your best friend.
Now, how many people, Ed, though, can pick up and go to these locations if they have
not
to?
Not that many. I've had probably 600 clients in the past 7 years, and nominally 80% of them have moved, have relocated already. But that's only 700 people. And many times, especially the elderly in cities and places like that, they cannot pick up and move. They don't have the finances, nor will they, blah, 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 to do that. And their survival zones are right where they're at. So they have to take that into consideration and prepare for those kinds of things. There's a lot of details here, and I do want to inject a sense of urgency. As I sent you a note saying that for the first time I'm going on tour this year, and it first and last time. I'm not going to do this again, and I'm going to do a crash course in remote viewing for people who want to find their sanctuaries, and then that's it. Because sanctuary locations are few and far between in the generalized locations.
Now, when you say that's it, are you implying we're going to get hit soon and that's it? Or you're just not going to do it anymore?
I'm implying both. I think that we're so close to, I believe, personally, my personal beliefs based upon my own work, is 2016, there's no sense for Dr. Doom to be out there on the road talking kill shot past 2016. So I'm not going to do it. It's a crash course. I used to give these familiarization courses to VIPs and corporate executives, one-day courses, but this time we're going to do it and then talk about how to use remote viewing to find your own personal sanctuary, which is different than just the general zones on the remote viewing map that we're going to start providing to people via mail for a while. And in that map, you'll see worldwide, globally, all the optimal survival zones and where you do not want to be, which is in red on most of the map, and that's a lot of places, And it isn't just because of power grids going down and infrastructure collapse. It's not just that. It's also the zones that we're looking at. For instance, a little background, British Columbia. British Columbia met all of the criteria, evidently, for lots of places in British Columbia. They had, with the power was down, no problem. They had a lot of fish, a lot of communities that were, and you can't, a bunker mentality is not going to cut it for you, because you're going to run out of ammo. If you have an abscessed tooth, that will kill you or your loved ones. You need communities of about anywhere from 10 to 20,000 people with a lot of skill sets that can be traded and bartered. And that's key. You're not going to survive in a cabin. A few people can, but most of us can't. We need people need people. So a lot of these optimum areas are small towns in civilized areas. For instance, where you're going is not an anomaly, but it's not common. Your sanctuary location is near a rather large city.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Christchurch, New Zealand, it is a sanctuary area. the entire
system. Now, that's not where you're sending me, of course. For
no, 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 no. Well, your unconscious picked it, not me. I just expertly downloaded the information.
Yeah, I'm still in the States, folks. Somewhere. Yeah.
And, but the point I'm trying to make is that you're not that far from a big city. But this particular big city is one in which people respect each other. They're fairly civilized, as you might agree.
Yes.
And is like Christchurch in many ways, where people are healthy. They grow up in a family atmosphere. There's a lot of farming communities, farmers who take care of each other, and that is key. That is key, one of the key criteria. But why British Columbia didn't, because fresh water, even if the skies are dark or high winds, fish can survive on algae for 2 years. So you have food, you have plenty of fuel and those kinds of things. What was wrong with British Columbia? Come to find out that a lot of the survival zones that looked good in the long run weren't because of radiation. Looking over the, in this case, it wasn't looking over the horizon, because as I predicted Fukushima, and Fukushima airborne plumes will impinge upon a great part of Western Rockies, west of the Canadian Rockies, for years and years and years to come, and causing a lot of damage, genetic damage to children, the radionuclides pouring down on them. So that's in other areas that looked really good to us, Labrador, Newfoundland, it turns out that reactors that will run out of fuel and not be able to cool themselves, and you're going to have breaches, hydrogen breaches, in 5 days or 7 days. A lot of the airborne plumes from power plants around Lake Huron and the Great Lakes will end up flowing over in that direction, then you have the same type of problem that you have in British Columbia, sadly, in such a beautiful spot.